Fred Film Radio, Tribeca Film Festival, New York.
This is Natasha Sinjanovic. I'm here at the Tribeca Film Festival with Angus McLaughlin, the director of Goodbye to All That, which is here in the World Narrative Competition, and it's also making its world premiere. The film is about a man, late 30s, played by Paul Schneider, who's one of my favorite actors, who's going through a divorce. He just seen in the beginning of the film, his marriage unravels. He finds out about it in an unexpected way. And then he has to deal with life on his own as he realizes that he's been floating through things and as he tries to tackle online dating. The film is very intimate, and I don't want to get into your business, but was it drawn from some of your own experiences or your friends' experiences?
Not personally. I'm not divorced. I am married. But it actually is inspired by a lot of friends that I went through similar circumstances. A lot of the incidents are based on that. The character of Otto that Paul Schneider plays is not based on anyone I know, but a lot of the incidents came from stories that good friends have gone through, and I would hear these, you know, horrifying, funny tales, and I thought, I'm going to maybe try to write something about this.
There's one in particular that is just one character that's too bizarre to not be true, I think, which is Debbie Spangler, which is played by Anna Camp. Yeah. She's this over-the-top, very Christian woman and also very sexually adventurous, tries to reconcile the two. That was from real life?
She's inspired by a true person, yes.
This you couldn't really make up.
Yeah, I'm glad you felt that way. And Anna Camp is great in it.
They're all very good. Otto's wife is played by, or ex-wife, by Melanie Lynskey. And their 9-year-old daughter is played by Audrey Scott, who's also very good.
A lot of the actors did not audition because I knew their work. I was just hoping maybe they would say yes. But we saw lots of kids. We had a great casting director, Mark Bennett, who's in L.A., and he brought kids from New York and L.A. and Chicago and all over the country. And actually, Audrey lives in Houston, although she works in L.A. quite a bit. And she's wonderful. She's very professional, and yet she's still a child. And she's a real actor. She really can act. I mean, some kids can imitate, but she can act. And she would even say, maybe I could do this or maybe I could do that. And she just has a quality. She's smart, too, which I love.
At that age, it's hard to feign that.
Well, also what helped me was I have a 12-year-old daughter, and actually when I was writing this, my daughter was near the character's age, so I know that children are complete human beings, and a lot of times they're not portrayed that way.
What about Paul Schneider? I know you're based in North Carolina, and he's, apart from being, I think, a very good actor, he's also the go-to guy for a lot of independent Southern films.
We considered a lot of different men for that role, and it was a tricky role to cast because it needed to be somebody who was a really good actor, but also has a quality that is likable and attractive enough that you could believe that these different women would want to go to bed with him, but he can't be too slick or attractive because then it would be kind of creepy. And he had to believe that he was an athlete, but also kind of clumsy and could be funny and serious. And one of the qualities that I love about Paul is that he's a real thinking actor, and there's always something, when you watch him on screen, there's always something going on in his mind. And I also really wanted to cast an actor who you could believe liked women as well as wanted to go to bed with them. And I don't know Paul that well, but I think he does like women, but he certainly liked all the actresses he worked with. And I think he has that quality where he can believe not only that, but also that he's a parent and that he cares. He is not Paul, does not have any kids, but you could believe that he could be the father of this child.
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, there's nothing he can't do. So the character that you had in mind already embodied all of that before you got to him.
Right. And I think it's a complete character that he creates and one that he's not really done anything like this. I mean, he certainly is the leading man, and he's done a few roles where he's the leading man, but a lot of times he's sort of the mischievous sidekick, you know. And I think this shows another real range for him, and, you know, I think he's in every single scene. And it's not Paul. It's not. He has created a complete character.
Now, this is your first. This is your debut feature. You're a playwright. You've directed in the theater, correct?
Yes.
And you're known as a screenwriter for Junebug, for Stone. And when you set out to make this film, I'm sure you had a lot of notions of what directing for the cinema was, because you've been around it for so much and you've directed. But were there things that completely surprised you that you didn't expect?
The hardest thing for me was overcoming my own 3 a.m. jitters because there's so much technically that I didn't completely know. Like I kind of knew what a first AD did, a first assistant director, but I didn't know the extent of what his, you know, duties were on the set.
Right, your shadow, your alter ego.
And I had a great one. Scott Larkin was just fantastic. And that was the hardest thing, the unknown of that aspect. But I never on the set felt overwhelmed or like, I don't know what I'm getting into or I don't know how to answer that question. It was never that at all. In fact, I felt like a duck to water. And I've done a lot of things. I was a visual artist as well. So in terms of speaking to my cinematographer, who was fantastic, Corey Walter, I think visually, so that was fantastic. One of the surprises, I guess, was in the editing process, how much a director and an editor can form a role, both positively and negatively for an actor, can either make them look much worse, not just physically look, but come off much worse than they are, or really help and improve their performance. Because I was an actor myself, I was just sort of amazed that as a film actor in particular, you're really throwing yourself into the darkness and you hope that the director is going to catch you and share your sensibility of what you think is your best work, because they really, you really can manipulate. I mean, even down to moments. And I've seen now they're using, we didn't use this, they CGI, you know, tears in people's eyes when the performance isn't there. I think the new Star Wars, George Lucas was one of the first people who did that. And if you go back and kind of look at the, you know, the new Phantom Menace movies, there's some tears that don't quite look real. We didn't do anything like that. But just in terms of takes or cutting away, maybe some actors may not be as adept at comedy, but you can create that sense by the rhythm of the cutting. Or perhaps we needed a longer moment than the actors ever played in any of the shots. And so in editing, you go back and forth and back and forth, and it looks like they're holding each other's gaze for longer than they actually did. And it's amazing. And I had a terrific editor, Jennifer Lilly, who I just adored. She's, if anybody gets a chance to work with her, they should rush.
As an actor, I'm sure you have your favorite approach that a director will have with you, a way that you like directors to work, that you feel most comfortable with, most challenged, inspired by. What about as a director? Were you able to implement those? Were you able to, and what are some of those? Do you like longer takes? Do you like improvisation? Do you like sticking to book? Do you like tons of rehearsal, no rehearsal?
We didn't have a lot of rehearsals, so that was sort of went by the wayside. And that was one of the questions I really had, like, how do you direct if you don't have any rehearsal? People would say, oh, you might get a little bit. And no one was ever really clear. But as an actor, I feel like to do your best work, you want to feel safe. And so that's a lot of the job for a director, is to make an actor feel safe. There's a great quote that Sean Penn said, is that he feels like he builds a cage and then he goes wild in the cage. And that to me means, if he has something that he feels safe where he's not ultimately going to hurt himself and ultimately make a complete, you know, ass of themselves, which is the director's job, is to hold you and make you feel safe, then he can go crazy in it. And I think that's what I wanted to do. And I also, because all actors work differently. Like Paul is untrained as an actor. He actually was educated as an editor. That's his degree from film school. He was not an actor.
Never knew that.
Yeah. He fell into acting because he was in school with David Gordon Green, who said, you know, come on, be in my first film, George Washington. But he is a real smart guy, but he's not trained. And then there are actors who are very trained, like Celia Weston, who know, you know, they have a long technique. Then there's an actor like Melanie Lynskey, who's very intuitive. And she is emotionally on point every second. And that was interesting in the editing process, because sometimes actors will get tired and they won't be there as strongly as other takes. But she just is, it must cost her a lot, because she's just so, every shot she is emotionally connected. And it's not to say that these actors, one is better than the other. They all work differently. So you have to, as a director, intuit how to talk to that person, because it won't help Melanie if I start talking of a concept or something, and perhaps with, you know, another actor, it wouldn't help to just let them go like Melanie can. Or
you have to be like a therapist who practices every school of psychology.
Absolutely. It's a real intuition. But, you know, also being a father really helped being a director, because a lot of your job is to be like an enthusiastic, really great dad. Because you have to be enthusiastic and make everybody feel involved and keep the energy going and sense when someone is in distress and, you know, try to say the best things to them and also not indulge them if they're being indulgent. You know, I mean, there's a lot to having having done that that helps. But also being an actor myself, I know, I understand. Or like when an actor might be behaving in a way that some of the crew might go, oh, well, what a diva. And we didn't have that quality, but I understand there's all this pressure and maybe they just feel overwhelmed. And so that helps.
You mentioned David Gordon Green, and I actually wanted to ask you about that. There seems to be a lot of activity going on in the South. Between Little Rock and North Carolina, there are a lot of filmmakers who are working there, some of whom go to L.A., go to New York, and then come back, actors as well. It seems like a great, vibrant scene.
I still live in Winston-Salem, and it certainly is easier for me and my family to have a very nice life and without the cost of New York. L.A. is not quite as expensive, but it's certainly more expensive than Winston-Salem, North Carolina. You know, when those things happen, a lot of times you don't even, you know, in terms of like a scene or a group, it's sort of history makes that an illumination, like the golden age. You know, it's like 5 years later, people say, oh, yeah, it was a golden age, but we didn't really realize it at the time. And I do know a lot of these people, mostly because we all went to the North Carolina School of the Arts. Not at the same time, but Jeff Nichols, who did Mud, and Craig Zobel, who did Compliance, and then these people who have a film here in Tribeca, Martha Stevens and Aaron Katz, they all went to the school as well. They have Land Ho, which was a big hit at Sundance. And I know David some, too, David Gordon Green. It's nice, and I think we're supportive of each other. So there's that kind of camaraderie.
Thank you very much. Thank you for talking to Fred.
Thank you.
That was Angus McLaughlin, the director of Goodbye to All That, which is making its world premiere here in Tribeca in the World Narrative Competition. And this is Natasha Sinjanovic, and you're listening to Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.